Hey, Randy, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you happen to be. So good to see you, my friend. How are you today?
Super, Steve, and I'm so pleased that we get a chance here to talk for a little bit about AI and ChatGPT in particular. I think the impact on the accounting profession and, frankly, all businesses globally is going to be pretty astounding.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, this technology just seems to have taken the world by storm over the last four or five months. I know it. I think I want to say it came out like in right around Thanksgiving of last year.
November 30th of 2022. And, you know, it's amazing to me that the company behind it had been formed back in 2015. So, you know, it took them a while to get this thing out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to note, you know, so the company behind ChatGPT, which is just one of many language models, chat bots, whatever you want to call it, is one of many, you know, types of products in this particular category. But I mean, this is just for OpenAI, which is the company behind ChatGPT. This isn't their first rodeo. They've had a few of these products over the last couple of years. But this just seems to have captured, you know, the focus of the world. You know, this is the thing that everybody's talking about. And that is being, I would say, kind of the adoption. It to me, it feels like, you know, like the iPhone wasn't the first smartphone on the market. You know, there are multiple devices, whether they were coming from Microsoft or Research in Motion, but it's the thing that captured the imagination that, you know, kind of spurred, you know, the whole adoption of the smartphone market. And that's kind of what it feels like here with ChatGPT and OpenAI's product.
Yeah, you know, I think you're in the right zone there, Steve, because this is a major waterfall tipping point moment, as I would see it. It's as significant as personal computer or internet, you know, as we go back. You've called out smartphone. And I think this will change the way business works from here forward. I think it's a bit of a Pandora's box, even though, 1,100 initially visionaries signed off on a document asking the AI labs to stop, pursuing AI. That document, the last time I checked, had over 20,000 signatures on it. But I don't think we're going back anytime soon. Now, I do understand the concerns about the way that the AI can be used for good or bad. You've heard me say that way too many times in the past. All technology can be used for good or bad. And it is clear people are using these platforms for excellent good, and they're using it for atrocious bad. So it's all the way across the spectrum, as they would say at this point.
Sure. Well, to frame our kind of discussion today, we're going to be exploring what ChatGPT is, and more broadly speaking, this kind of category of product and what it is, how it's used, where it has been, and where it is going. ChatGPT, as we've mentioned, is a specific example brought forth by a company called OpenAI, which is I'm not going to say a consortium because it's its own entity, but the likes of Microsoft and Tesla and many other, you know, kind of major technology companies are the companies that are providing the funding for OpenAI. Kind of as it feels like more like a consortium in some respects, even though it's its own thing, to bring AI more into the fold. You know, AI, artificial intelligence, been around in different iterations for many, many years at this point. But, you know, as we've kind of already hinted at, I feel like we're really at a tipping point where this technology is kind of being baked into a lot of stuff now. And this really feels like the first practical application above and beyond like what you could do with Alexa or Google Assistant, where you can just ask it basic stuff like changing the thermostat, what's the weather in Paris, to like actually like this can do work. This is like a digital worker. I can hire ChatGPT to do things in my life or do things in my business in a meaningful way above and beyond just, you know, call and response and simple actions and simple information that can be presented. And so what I'd like.
Yeah, I know, Steve, you and I have both actually been down that path together, where you've been trying to learn how to use this assistant, this digital assistant, in a more sophisticated way and faster. And I've actually begun treating it like I might a staff, a senior, a manager, and just saying, look, I want it to do this. And when it does things wrong, I correct it and ask it for the correct information. And it seems to learn for that session how to do things better. So, you know, again, it's a whole different world here that we're trying to teach you about, and it's moving fast, but it is a nifty digital worker that can get an awful lot done in an intelligent way, because it's basically read the content of the web and tried to assemble it into a framework through their large language models.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And so, you know, let's start with just broadly speaking, you know, if from your perspective, you know, ChatGPT as a component brings together lots of different aspects of AI, natural language processing, machine learning, and more. Why don't you give us a kind of the lay of the land with respect to like what AI is, you know, some of the major maybe features or tenets, components of it, and just how do we get here? You know, what does that look like in today's environment, and where did we start and where are we now?
Yeah, and I don't want to go into too much history and detail from the past. Now, AI got its start back in the late 50s. So we're not talking about something that's brand new, but what we're doing now is quite different. And Steve, you may recall that I actually wrote artificial intelligence myself on a language called Lisp. Mm-hmm. In the 1970s. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that work in, you know, 1975, 6, 7, 8, that type of time frame. But what happened here is the models that support artificial intelligence, there are some that are open source, there are some that are proprietary developed by companies. And recent reports from multiple places, Stanford and The Economist and others, have cited that there are at least 32 new AI engines that were released this year, that 3 came from academia, mm-hmm. and 29 came from other sources. Now, the trick here is to be effective, you've got to use a lot of algorithms. And one thing I don't know as of our conversation right now is how many algorithms are behind some of these engines. Through the years, I've said we've needed about 50 algorithms to be effective. 7 to 15 of them could be the standard open source algorithms. And then the other algorithms would be what gave products their special sauce. Sure. But at least at this point, you've got a broad number of companies competing with some open source algorithms and some of their own, with databases that have either been trained manually or trained automatically to give answers.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And, you know, folks, what we're speaking to here is, you know, there's actually two pieces of it from my perspective. I'm sure there's actually many more than that. But, you know, an algorithm is a way of doing something. It's just a defined process that takes an input and puts out an output that's consistent with respect to what you do. And so these companies, you know, that's in a lot of ways the secret sauce. It's determining how to do it and what to do and what to weight. And, you know, in terms of like what's more important or what's not as important, how it all comes together, you know, and that's some real, I mean, these technologies are leveraging some really heavy math and really heavy computer science. And there's a lot of brilliant people that are putting this together, you know, that to solve all different types of problems. But you have different algorithms that do different things. You know, there's algorithms that are focused on, like with Alexa, call and response, asking a question and getting a relevant response back. And there's certain algorithms that are designed to do other things. There's this other really kind of contemporary technology that's popular right now called Midjourney. And it's an algorithm designed to build imagery and to build like visual things that, you know, ChatGPT can't do. ChatGPT is great at doing text, but it's not going to, paint a painting for you. But like there's other algorithms that can do that, you know. And the other big piece of this is the data. You know, we're all generating tremendous quantities of information now, you know, and we're getting this information from so many different places. So much of these products are really like they either are made or broken really on the quantity of information that they can process. And it feels like ChatGPT is just endless, you know, with the amount of source data that it has at its disposal, that it's learned from, and then the speed of the algorithm to be able to process that information to give you something usable back. It's just truly awe-inspiring. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And it turns out, you know, these developments require a lot of back-end processing horsepower. And the OpenAI platform, AI platform, and ChatGPT in particular, was funded originally by Microsoft to the tune of about $1 billion, and they put $10 billion more in. But it's running on Microsoft Azure.
Yes.
And it's running some of the GPUs on the back end. And I think it's been interesting to note that Google with their Bard is running off their TensorFlow platforms. Yep. And a lot of others are using NVIDIA hardware. So there's a lot of compute power behind it. And, you know, just like your Midjourney example with the pictures and its competitors, DALL-E and many others. In fact, the new Microsoft Designer is using AI to generate stunning images at higher resolutions than Midjourney or DALL-E. Just amazing what's going on. But ChatGPT in particular is text-based. So one of the things it doesn't do well is numbers. And for accountants, we want a lot of these things to do numbers well and fill out forms well and so forth. So that's not what it's at. But we're really only a few years into this journey on the Gen AI products like ChatGPT. Now, as our listeners may know, there's been multiple revisions because you're right, Steve. The first publicly released product, the ChatGPT 3.5 in November, was released, and then a new version, ChatGPT 4. Yeah. Oh man!
I know. Came
out in March, and it turns out that the March release on March 14th was quite good. Then there was an additional release on ChatGPT on March 23rd and so forth. Now, most of these engines were using databases that had a cutoff date back in September of 21. But Microsoft has enabled their Bing search engine to use not only all of the predecessor pre-September 21 data, but it's also using current search to come up with some of its results. So instead of having this static cutoff that we suffered with ChatGPT for a while, we now have a little more, currency in terms of the information.
Sure, sure. I read something not too long ago that that Google CEO, with respect to kind of ChatGPT, like it was an all hands crisis. So Sundar, who's the CEO of Google, like pulled multiple people like off of like their best and brightest out of a variety of different Google projects just to, I guess, address the issue of that ChatGPT. I mean, if you think about it, Google, I mean, at the end of the day is a search engine, and a majority, like 90%+ of the revenue comes from marketing and advertising. If all of a sudden they're no longer the most relevant results, I mean, that's going to be a major threat to their business. And it's kind of amazing, again, that like this didn't come out of like Google directly or Microsoft directly, that it is a independent company. Very rarely does it seem today that you see a company that can make it all the way up, you know, kind of growing up to become a dominant player. And unfortunately, with big tech, with the mergers and acquisitions environment that we're in today, it just seems that if you have anything reasonably interesting or good, you get bought before you can even make a splash.
And to your point there, Steve, different reports have shown that Google's market share in advertising search has dropped from about 70 to about 50%. And it's done it in a precipitous, you know, 6-month period or something like that. So I understand the CEO reaction on that. I think it has little to do with the economy, much to do with alternate search engines being used, of which ChatGPT is one of those. Isn't it amazing? I normally can say that with no problem, and today having a real devil with it. But you get the idea, because, you know, this whole derailing of the advertising model for Google is killer. And frankly, the results for most of what I try to do, I'm way better off right now in the AI engines than I am in the generic search engines.
Yep. I would agree. And
you know, probably the difference there, Steve, just so our listeners kind of get it, the results are basically a paragraph or collection of bullet points, a numbered list perhaps, instead of a link farm. You know, so if you do a search with Google, DuckDuckGo, UDuck, it doesn't matter who you use, Yahoo, it doesn't matter. You get a list of links. Well, what do most of us do? We look at the one that we think's most relevant, we click through, and we look at another one and click through, and we miss, I think, many different pieces. But I know in the modified Bing engine, it actually writes you a very interesting summary and then goes on to show you the references, typically 3 to 5 references of where the information came from.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I thought this might be interesting. I mentioned I found a pretty interesting article here from from this website for Analytics Magazine, and it was talking about essentially the data that ChatGPT was used to learn, and it learned from 300 billion words and 570 gigabytes of data, which frankly doesn't seem like a lot, but I guess it's how you put it together and how you string it together, you know. But in a nutshell, I mean, it's got the entirety of, let's say, Wikipedia. It's got, you know, a majority of, you know, news articles and other credible sources that it's gained over the last couple of years that have been published. I've read reports, for example, that like ChatGPT has passed the bar exam. I read something very recent that said it passed the medical exam. I think it's called the MCATs. You know, mm-hmm. And it's maybe not the largest model that's out there, but it's about how they've made it so useful and interesting and helpful for people. You know, it's about the application. It's not just sheer quantity of knowledge. It's about how that knowledge is used and how it's indexed and retrieved.
And, you know, I have been using it for various accounting regulations because many of us use one of the traditional research tools. So we're using BNA, or we're using Checkpoint, or we're using, the knowledge code, whatever we're using, some paid search. But we know a lot of accounting professionals simply have used Google.
Yeah.
But it, as an interesting attempt, you can do something very simple like, summarize the tax rates, or show me what, are acceptable mileage rates as of a particular date. And the thing will write a beautiful summary for you. And I think what I'd like you to begin considering is, what can we use this for in a practical way in accounting? And my normal recommendation, if you're not familiar with this, is that you do go to OpenAI and sign up for a ChatGPT account, and that you, even if you've never used the Bing search engine from Microsoft, sign up and get admitted for the Bing search engine and use those two as examples of the way you search, and then do your search in your normal search engine. If you're used to using Google, more power to you, do it that way, and then turn around and do it in the other two engines and look at the results.
Yep.
And get more sophisticated, write a 300-word summary, and be very specific. In fact, that's one of the things that over the last few months, I've been specifically trying to learn how to ask questions in a better way so these generative AI engines will respond in a better way. Remember at the start of our conversation, Steve, I said, look, this is like having a good assistant, a very intelligent assistant, a very well-read intelligent assistant.
Yeah, no, I would say it's a force multiplier. These tools, where I think a lot of people get really worried about, is that, you know, these tools are going to just, you know, all of a sudden snap the fingers, jobs are gone. And there's some truth to that, you know, but it's not going to happen today, but it could happen in the future. But, you know, for those of us who I would say embrace this, you can either be on the leading edge of this or you can be behind it. I think it's a force multiplier. I think it's one of those things that gives you so much more capability than you could before. You know, the example I always go to for this type of technology, it's like a truck and a trailer. You know, I can move more than double the amount of gear if I put a trailer behind my truck for the same amount or maybe even slightly more gas, you know, and I can move twice or even three times the amount of gear that I could move if I were to make multiple trips with my truck. Where ChatGPT and tools like it have become so helpful for qualified professionals who know how to leverage this and ask the right question and get good responses, like you're not getting double the output, you know, I mean, or just a little bit more. You're getting double or even more than double the output of what you can do. You know, in a professional setting, it's giving guidance. It's doing a lot of the supplemental work, the preliminary work, a lot of the headache work that frankly is low value to begin with, you know, so it gets you the, you know, kind of further along the road than you would if you were to just kind of do everything from scratch.
Yeah, hands down. In fact, you know, that mundane, repetitive stuff that nobody really cares to do, man, these tools get you past that in a hurry. Or, you know, if you've ever had that feeling, I've got to write something and I'm starting with a blank piece of paper, this gives you a non-blank piece of paper to start with. It's also real clear to me, though, that there should be concerns about intellectual property and technical guidance. Mm-hmm. But what this does is it gives you such a big lever, because if you're a professional and you can ask the right questions, you're going to have a wonderful starting point that you can then apply your expertise. And for me, Steve, I've come to the conclusion that I can get work done in about 25% of the time. So I'm getting four times the volume of work. And frankly, I think it's higher quality. Now, at the risk of tipping one of my secret cards, when we write continuing professional education, we have to have examination questions. And I've found that if I ask ChatGPT to write those questions for me, that it'll do a marvelous job based on my content, my learning objectives, and so forth. And instead of me sitting there scratching my head and writing terrible, boring questions, I get darned accurate questions in a hurry that have identified the correct answer and the learning objective that's being tested. And to me, that's hours and hours of work saved. I won't tell our listeners a story today of a situation where I burned the better part of 4 days writing questions for coursework that I'd done. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, really? I could have done all that automatic if I'd had these tools at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, it does save a tremendous amount of time. And I've used it to summarize things, to pull out key points, to ask it questions, you know, to clarify something for me that would otherwise, you know, be kind of difficult to be able to do. And what's kind of cool with this, and I think maybe we switch over here and take a look at OpenAI's website and actually do some hands-on with this here just in a second. What's interesting with this is that, you know, it's not like with Alexa or Google Assistant, you can ask it one thing and then the next thing you ask it has no concept of what you just talked about. You know, so like if I asked it, for example, hey, let's say I'm planning a trip to like Chicago, like, hey, you know, like what's the time difference to LA, you know, what's the traffic looking like in downtown Chicago right now? And then I ask, what's the weather is the next question. It'll ask me, well, what city are you talking about? You know, like there's no concept of a conversation like where you can pause, reflect, think about what you've already talked about, the response that you've already given, and then beyond, you know, like with this, you know, if I were to ask it that same stuff about Chicago, it's going to assume I'm talking about Chicago unless I tell it otherwise, but it's aware of every response we've had up to this point. And it remembers what I talked about and what it responded with. And so you're able to have a conversation. Like, can you explain that? Can you explain that a little bit different? Or, hey, can you give me another example of this? Or how would this apply if this, that, or the other? Where existing tools that existed prior to this, they just can't do that for you.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you're actually skirting around a few rules that I've been applying. You know, one of those rules is talking to the AI like you would talk to a person. I think it's very helpful to set the stage and provide context. And I think it's also to tell the AI to assume an identity or a profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's take a look at OpenAI's website here and just maybe explore a little bit about the company. And then let's talk about how you get started with ChatGPT and maybe some of the cool things you can do with it. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And for those of you who are watching this on YouTube, feel free to continue to watch. But those of you who might be listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you happen to receive your content, as a reminder, you can always find our podcast for free on YouTube or cpetoday.com, and you can watch some of the things that we're discussing here. And also, a shameless plug, if you're interested in professional education credits, you can also earn credits at cpetoday.com or k2e.com as well. So let's take a look at the website here. And so if you were to go get started with ChatGPT, you're going to be doing this through OpenAI's website, and that's OpenAI.com. And you can browse, as I mentioned, ChatGPT is one of multiple products that they offer. It kind of feels like the approach that they're taking here, Randy, is almost like an infrastructure provider in the sense that, yes, they do make some products and services, but it really feels that when I look at the different things that they're doing here and the different products that they offer, it really feels like they're more designing this to be plugged into other things, you know, like it's being plugged into other software and other products that are kind of already out there on the market. So you don't have to go from the ground up and just completely build your own language model. You could just leverage this and pay them, you know, a little bit of on the side for the services that you use, more similar to like an AWS, Amazon Web Services, or Azure type model.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Steve. And we have been observing accounting professional tools attempting to make these interfaces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not unlike the open source release of ChatGPT with, what do they call it, Stanford's Alpaca? Yes. I believe that's what it was called. So it's the same type of thing here. But you are right. I think they've got their open source type of development that they did, and then they also spun off into their private relationships. It was really 2019. Well, let's go back. This company was founded in December of 2015, and they were not for profit until 2019 when they transitioned to for profit. And then in 2020, they formed their relationship with Microsoft, which is really the genesis of ChatGPT and DALL-E.
Yes. Yeah. So here are the different products. We have ChatGPT, the GPT models. And a lot of people get, you know, kind of like, what is the GPT? The GPT is just, it's an acronym, and it stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. And it's just it's a category of product. So it's, there are other GPTs besides the ones made by OpenAI. And further, it's important that this is a version thing. ChatGPT has a version 3. 3.5 is the standard at the point of this recording. But the bleeding edge of this, and I played with it a bunch, I know you have as well, is the version 4, ChatGPT 4, which you can do. I mean, the difference is pretty stark. I will tell you that, I mean, 3.5 is amazing. Like, I mean, you can do some really cool stuff with it. But 4, it's like the difference if you were to ask a question to an eighth grader versus, let's say, a college sophomore. I'm not going to say it's like a PhD, you know, rocket scientist here, but just imagine you were to ask, you know, a question, a philosophical question between those two age differences. You're going to get a very different response with, you know, a more mature, thoughtful response with age and experience and wisdom. That's kind of the difference between these language models. 3.5, it's going to get it there. You know, it's going to be, you know, pretty right in the ballpark. But 4 is going to be a much more robust and a much more thoughtful, as well as much more precise answer than you're going to get with 3.5. And then they also have their DALL-E product. DALL-E is for creating realistic images. A complementary tool to this, although it's a separate company, is Midjourney. You know, it's also doing the photorealistic as well. Okay. They've got Whisper, speech recognition that can transcribe, identify, and translate across multiple images as well. And then, you know, across this, they've got the tools that you can directly interact with, but then they also have what's called an API, application programming interface, that gives you the ability to be able to embed ChatGPT in other applications and services. In fact, one of my favorite WordPress tools that I use for forms just emailed me this morning saying that they have embedded ChatGPT's API right into their products to assist with forms where you can collect information from your customers and almost use it as a customer service tool as well. Now, to get started with this, you're going to need to go to openai.com and you're going to need to sign up for an account. Creating the account is free. And once you've created that account, you're going to use what will be chat.openai.com. And it'll take you to a screen that kind of looks like this. They give you some different examples of different capabilities and different things that you can do. There's a disclaimer here saying, you know, hey, just a heads up, you know, this is a computer model. Don't do life or death decisions based off of this. But this is where I think where most people end up getting started. And for purposes here, I'm just using the standard 3.5 version, not the 4, just so that people, you know, if they go to try this themselves, they're going to get a similar experience. But what was the first thing that you did with ChatGPT when you tried it out for the first time?
That's kind of interesting as a question, Steve, because I wanted to see how it identified people. Sure. So one of the first things I did was ask it to give me a resume of several people I knew.
Okay.
And one of those people that I asked for a resume on was Doug Sleater, who had done a lot with QuickBooks. Sure. And, of course, it did a pretty good job while, and then it said that Doug had died, I think, in 2017, which, of course, he's still very much alive.
So, Randy.
So I can see, Steve, you basically have done an Elon Musk resume. And, of course, Elon was one of the founders of OpenAI originally. But you can also see how, you know, it's done a pretty good job on his resume, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, with respect to this, what's kind of nice is that you can ask it just general questions here and it'll respond back to you again, kind of like with that kind of full, thoughtful response of what you can do. And so you said you, you know, you use this to, you know, kind of write a resume. So I did an example here. Can you write a resume for Elon Musk? And, you know, here it does. Elon Musk, South African, born entrepreneur, engineers, yada, yada, yada. You know, kind of gives a good overview. It's important to note, though, like the knowledge with respect to it has available. I think it was 2021. It doesn't know much beyond that. Very limited, not no knowledge, but very limited knowledge with respect to after 2021. Is that how it works?
Yeah, September 2021 in the 3.5 version.
Okay, got it. Got it. And so why don't we just ask it some kind of fun things here and just see what we can kind of get out of it here. So we wrote a nice, you know, kind of a biography on Elon. We could probably, you know, what's also kind of cool, but it kind of start to illustrate some of the things that you can do with this is that you can ask it to also refine this. You could say, for example, like we've got this nice multiple paragraph thing on Elon, but I could say something like, can you please give me, let's say, 5 bullet points? Okay. And it'll just give you those kind of major summary things about Elon. You know, in this case, like, hey, this is a lot easier. I've used this a lot to condense stuff, you know, like TLDR, too long, don't read, you know, like, hey, just give me the kind of major synopsis with respect to a specific topic. And that's been really kind of effective for me.
Yeah, that makes great sense. And I have used it in similar fashions, you know, like if it was too long, maybe make it shorter or make it longer. And let it regenerate it. And it does a beautiful job of expanding or contracting.
Yep. Yep. And it can also put this stuff into a table, which is quite nice as well. We can see here it's giving us those existing bullet points. Once it's done here, we can ask it, can you please put this in a table? And this has been great for, you know, I would say like summary reports, PowerPoint presentations on the web, so on and so forth, you know, that you can be able to kind of put this, it could format this in a very helpful and meaningful way. So
Yep, absolutely.
Have you ever used it to be creative or to be silly? Have you tried any of that stuff out?
You know, I have done some of that because I was trying to push the limits there, Steve. So how about if you open up a new chat? And that way, for our listeners, we'll just remind you that it's like you're starting over from scratch. It doesn't know anything that you've really asked up to this point. But, you know, I don't know how far silly we want to get together today on this, Steve. But, you know, again, unrehearsed friends and just something out of the blue, you know, which countries in the world would be best for playing golf?
Yeah. Okay. For those of you who are listening, you basically go to the screen. It's just like typing an email out. You just start writing and then you hit send and it comes back with a response. So I type in which countries would be best for a round of golf. And here's the kicker and why. Okay. So not just necessarily give me a list. Oh, Scotland, Phoenix, Arizona, stuff like that. You know, it starts to give us some different responses here. So we can see Scotland, known for the home of golf. Scotland boasts some of the best and oldest and prestigious golf courses. United States, no joke there. Augusta National, Pebble Beach, Pinehurst, Ireland. Okay, home of the most scenic golf courses in the world. Okay, Australia, South Africa, so on and so forth. And you could do the same thing with skiing, you know, rock climbing, you name it. You know, it can be able to kind of provide that insight for you.
And, you know, for those of you just listening, ChatGPT kept that conversation and automatically labeled it best golf destination. So what can happen? Steve could come back to his ChatGPT place, go right back in that conversation and resume it with, you know, other questions like, what's the best lodging in these golf destinations? And, you know, almost tourism-like, and you could see how that could be quite different, you know, for compared to a search result that you might get with Google.
I've used this a lot to actually ask like follow-up questions because I found that, like, again, like Google, it'll get you the results that you're looking for, but that's never the entire story. You know, in the sense like there's other stuff I want to talk about or ask, or, you know, I've used this a lot for coding projects and accounting projects where it's like even questions you couldn't have anticipated at the beginning of this, that you can now almost just have a conversation with the subject matter expert on, you know. So like we did this here asking for some of the different golf recommendations. We've got Scotland, the United States, Ireland, so on and so forth. But I could ask it a follow up question saying like, I'm taking my dad on this trip. Okay, we live in Southern California, and I'm going to say even SoCal. I'm going to use abbreviation slang. It's aware of that, right? We don't want to fly anywhere. Where could we go?
And Steve, you may want to change that from talking to taking, but that's okay.
Yes, thank you. Right, taking. Drop the E. Okay. You know, so. And again, it'll give us some different things. Okay, so cool. You don't want to fly. You want to go by a car. It's interesting. It just knew that. I mean, we know that. Humans know that. We know, like, when we say, like, I don't want to fly. Okay, well, that opens up train. That opens up a car, you know, even like, you know, bus or even something like that. But it's able to take this into consideration. So it gives us Pebble Beach, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Scottsdale, San Diego, Palm Springs, so on and so forth. We could say something like, can you recommend, let's say, some good restaurants to complement our game? Okay, unfortunately, user error. You got to spell the right question. You know, and so it'll give us, again, some just different recommendations here. In this case, it went right back to Scotland, but here for the United States, Mastro's, and oh, that's a good one. So, you know, I found the fact that I can continue to refine my questions and kind of get a little bit more tight with respect to exactly what I'm looking for. You know, again, it's like having the ability to ask anybody anything and they know exactly what you're talking about. They're not just making it up, you know?
Yeah. You know, so Steve, we really got here by just you ask if I'd just done something kind of fun or way off the wall. But then I did turn almost immediately to some fairly heavy duty, serious questions. And these are not super serious, but you're going to get the idea here in a moment, because I want to see how well it would do things like write QuickBooks Online month-end close procedures for me. And so I did that type of thing. And I also asked questions like, what's the best? And I often would do all sorts of different topic areas relating to accounting technology. And, as I did that, it was pretty clear to me that it could summarize initially things much faster than I could do the research. It would document the sources of those things. And then I could apply my technical expertise to refine it further. And, I believe that we had a discussion because you knew that I had to write an emerging technology and artificial intelligence course.
Yes.
And, I think you've actually set this up. Can you please give me a table of artificial intelligence and Power BI?
Yep.
And provide hyperlinks to support the response.
Yep. Yep. Well, as we were talking here, I typed in, for example, can you give me some examples of QBO monthly procedures, right? Like for the end of the period. Tell me if you disagree with any of these, or if a client called you and they said, Randy, I've got my new accounting system in place here. It's the end of the month. How do I get my books closed? I feel like 99 times out of 100, and this is where the acumen and experience kicks in. Like, this is pretty close. And then I might put my own little take on it, or I might provide a little bit of context that's recent that maybe the software doesn't know about, but it's pretty close. You know, you're on the, to borrow our example of golfing here. I mean, you're on the green, you're not in the rough overall. But you tell me here, okay, reconcile bank and credit card accounts. Sounds like a pretty good monthly procedure. Review journal entries. Yep. Review and categorize expenses. Absolutely. Categorize income. Review and adjust AR and AP accounts. Okay. Review and adjust inventory. Generate financial statements. Okay. Review financial statements. Back up your data. Oh man, I wish I could get all my clients to do that. And finally, which is the one I really like here, close your books, because this has been one of our longstanding K2 recommendations for reducing your risk with respect to misappropriation and fraud, is to close your QBO, because it's a perpetual accounting system. Anybody can go back and make changes, but closing the books will limit the scope in which somebody can make those changes later on. But I think those are dead on, man. I can't really think of much else I would want to add to this.
And Steve, that's exactly what the more I did, the more I said, I have through the years made recommendations, and ChatGPT just did a beautiful job summarizing those things for me and saved me a ton of time to create them. So, one of the things that I then began to learn, and we would encourage all of our listeners to do, is start teaching the engine about yourself so it will write like you. And I have found that I have a few articles that I like to seed the chat with, and I usually identify myself. I'm Randy Johnston. This is a sample of my writing. I would like you to write, and then I name what I want it to write in my style.
Yes. Yep.
And it is, it's learned my style good enough that I have a hard time at times knowing that it was me writing or the machine writing, which, by the way, like we said earlier, for professionals, this is such a strong lever.
Yep. Yep. Here's something a professional might need, okay, at some point, and hopefully you all are doing this already. How about an engagement letter? You could write and use this as a basis of creating a financial engagement letter for your clients. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying you should always review this with anything legal like this with qualified counsel, or at the very minimum, your professional liability insurance. But sometimes I just don't even know how to start writing that, or writing an engagement letter for any service for that matter. You know, you can come here and you could say, for example, can you give me, okay, an example of an engagement letter for basic bookkeeping and accounting services. Okay. It's going to come back and it's going to get started here. And I like this. They'll say date, client name, client address. We're pleased to have this opportunity to provide bookkeeping. Here's what we're going to do. Here are the responsibilities that you're responsible for. These, but I mean, it spells out a lot of this, you know? But then what's kind of cool with this is that you could refine this a little bit further. You could say something like, we're going to set up their QBO, and I want to specifically get that incorporated into this letter. So we're going to say, we're going to set up the client's QBO. I want that included. And the name of our firm is Randy Steve Industries. Okay. Okay. And it will refine this. And I find that kind of like iteration here, you know, in terms of like being able to go back and forth, you know, oh, okay. You know, now, for example, like I'm reading through this and this is great. It's got our responsibilities. I noticed, for example, it didn't include a line item for, you know, the client being responsible for filing their payroll taxes and retaining qualified insurance. You know, I could go back and I could say, can you add something a little bit about this? Or I could say something like, can you please mention, I always find myself being polite with these. I feel like if the robot overlords ever take over, I want them to be like, Steve was polite, you know? Venue of law is Kansas. Okay. And great. It'll just keep iterating through this, but it's like, I didn't think of the Kansas thing to begin with for our venue. I didn't think of this to begin with, but like, it's not just like with Google where it's just going to dump you to some website and you got to figure it all out. Like you can, you know, kind of iterate through this to ultimately get what you're looking for, you know? And so here it added our line, the engagement was covered and construed by the accordance to the laws of Kansas, you know, for the state of Kansas, which is a great way to get started. Maybe not be perfect, but you know how we've always recommended, and for those of you who've never gone there, the SANS Institute, which is a great group that does security training for all different types of organizations. They got these great policies, you know, that how many classes have we recommended those policies in? Oh. You know, almost.
Boy, I can't tell you, but I can tell you, I did it before we recorded the podcast today.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it happens to me all the time, but you are right. For those types of policies,
they're great.
They have been superb. And frankly, I think what's getting written in the generative AI tools is better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you go down this path, another one that a lot of people have, that's many organizations struggle with, is marketing information.
Yeah.
And you can actually give the ChatGPT engine your website, a few references on you, and say, write a summary of our business. And then once you've done that, you can refine it a little bit if you care to, but then you can ask it to write 5 social media posts about this particular service. So, you know, since you're writing a bookkeeping engagement letter, you might summarize your business and then have social media posts. And it does a beautiful job of extracting those things well.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. And it's a great starting off point, which is really kind of where I was going with the SANS Institute thing. It might not be perfect. It might not cover everything you want, but it is so sometimes difficult when you just got a pure blank canvas. Like, where do you start? How do I talk? Like, the difference between something and nothing is infinite. And in the marketing sense too, I mean, especially for firms, you know, CPA, solo practitioner, small partnerships, like, I mean, you're not only, you know, the owner, but you're employee number one, and you got to do all the, you know, everything, including all the marketing and sales. And I mean, if you're not actively trying to go out and recruit clients, you're missing, you know, you're missing many opportunities. And this can greatly help. Like if you needed to go to Google, Google My Business and put in a business profile, or if you needed to go to Yelp and put in a, you know, again, like a description of your company. I mean, a lot of people struggle, like, what do I write about? You know, you can point it at known resources and it can help you in that way.
And even though you may know your clients well, ask the tools to write in the tone of that client. So you can say, my target client is a small business owner with less than $5 million in revenue who provides services. Yes. And it will write in the tone that that person would understand. Or my target client is a healthcare professional in specialty practice.
Yep. Yep.
And it will write in that tone. And, you know, when you begin to realize you can write in your tone and target very specifically the type of clients or services that you want to target, this is wildly easier than that blank piece of paper syndrome. Yeah. So, you know, you've got me in the zone that I'm thinking about it over and over again, Steve. Earlier, we'd suggested that some of these tools will sometimes just hallucinate. Mm-hmm. They'll just make stuff up. And we do want to warn you, there are several shortfalls. We're not over the moon about everything that these products can do, but we recognize their value and we recognize their shortfalls. And one thing that you should be very cautious about is if you can focus the generative AI tool that you're using, ChatGPT in this example, that you can make it not hallucinate quite as much, but you still are going to have to look at the results. So one of the things that I'm worried about for you is that you just don't turn this on and not monitor it, because the results could get out of hand. No, not even close. And so it is a wonderful assistant. Now, one of the other things that I've been asked within the last 24 hours is, would these ChatGPT tools take over the planet? Would they become sentient, if they will? And there are companies that are putting these engines inside robots so they can have greater conversation. So, you know, it turns out it's pretty clear that this will advance relatively rapidly and the engines will get updated and become more sophisticated. There's already some throttles in the engines to keep them from releasing certain types of information. For example, bad actors are already using these tools to write new zero-day attacks. Well, by design, they've been turned off to, you know, write me a zero-day attack. But if you can ask it to write it in parts, it will write each of the separate parts, and then you can assemble it together. So it doesn't have quite enough controls around that. So remember, they can be used for good or bad, but I'm going to suggest that the bad actors and the state actors are going to use these post-haste because they're better than anything else that they have. Now, there are some new engines all over the world being developed, and you should recognize that, again, I called earlier 32 new engines out. OpenAI is just one of the many companies whose valuation has exceeded $1 billion, that's a unicorn, in the market. But you already have players like Adept and Cohere and Anthropic and Character.ai and Hugging Face and Stability.ai and Jasper. And notice, I'm not trying to name them all. I'm just trying to get you to understand there's lots and lots of tools out there. We've been loosely talking around one from one company, but there are many, many more. And all of these different groups have their own AI engines. And almost every major competitor is trying to develop their engine. You know, if we use Meta or Facebook, they've actually announced that they are doing graphic clipping, so they can clip anything out of any image with their new tools. The Chinese government has announced their tools. I can keep going on a rant, but I want you to understand, this train has left the station.
Absolutely.
We want you to
get out of the bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And we want you to be on the train. So we're trying to slow it down enough that, like some of the old movies, you can run up beside the train, grab the handle, and climb on board before this departs.
Yep. I agree. Well, it took me a minute here, Randy, but I did get it to work. And I think it was just due to bad data in there. But even something like this, explaining income and loss, you know, it can give you nice, clear definitions, you know. Hey, when a corporation makes money, that's income, you know? But
And I was watching you struggle as we were chatting there, because there are times when these engines get overrun. ChatGPT alone got 100 million subscribers in the month of January of 2023.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of millions of users on here, and the systems are getting beat on a regular basis. And I'm amazed that they can hold up as well as they do. But I do know that because I tend to use GPT-4 the most, there are currently throttles on this, even in the paid account, because the paid account has a cap of 25 messages every 3 hours. And I think it's just to keep their systems from getting overrun.
100%. Yeah. And there's releases too, like as of this recording, the most recent release here is for March 23rd. There's going to be more that'll be coming out. I'm sure there'll be another one here. Considering this is almost a month old, I'm sure there'll be another one coming up. And with every release, they add new features and functions. The most recent release, they added the ability to create plugins so that ChatGPT can now access up-to-date information, as well as access information from third parties as well. And more and more of this is coming. And also point out, too, this is a great tool if you need help with any application you could think of. You know, if you were, for example, utilizing Power BI, you could ask it questions about specific error messages or Excel, or here are the formulas that you might want to use. Like, it'll give you really good feedback. And even if you have issues with respect to like an error or something, it'll be able to respond to those as well. You know, and give you those contexts. For me, as a software developer and a financial professional, the debugging capabilities alone have been fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I was listening to you summarize it that way, Steve, the only thing I'm sure about these new AI tools is that I can't imagine all the ways they can be used.
Yep.
And we would like for you to consider ways that you've always wished computers could help you. And in fact, they may now be able to with these tools.
Yep. Yeah. It's just something, folks, just go sign up. It's free. You know, I can't imagine it'll always be free, for at least for the foreseeable future. It is. It's more than a set of parlor tricks. It's not a magician. There's no wizard behind the curtain here. I mean, there's thousands of people and thousands of predicating advancements in computer science and math have made this possible. And it's only going to get better. There's only more advances that are going to come now. And whether you choose to use these tools or not, your competitors will. So you're better off using them and leveraging them and learning how they can incorporate them, because it's going to take you a lot further than not. You know, again, it's that truck and trailer. It's that force multiplier. And Randy, I think it's about time that we wrap this up today. Do you have any parting thoughts, anything you'd like to share before we call it a day?
Well, Steve, all I know is I've never seen so many trucks and trailers arrive at the loading docks at the same time. And the opportunity is great. So please do take advantage of that and catch this train.
Yep.
Because it's leaving the station.
Absolutely. Well, I think that does it for us here, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. Thank you for your time and attention. Check out cpetoday.com, where you can listen to this broadcast, as well as shop many of our continuing education courses on a wide range of accounting and other financial topics, as well as k2e.com for your next training event for your company or your society. As always, Randy, it is a pleasure being with you. Thank you so much for being with us here today, and I look forward to our next conversation and podcast.
Good day, all.
Take care.